When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Steve Politi from NJ Advanced Media, and welcome back to the Rutgers Rant. I'm joined, as always, James Cratch, Keith Sargent. A bye week, guys, a Saturday off. It was like, I mean, I didn't know what to do with myself. Of course, I just watched bad football that did not involve Rutgers. I'm sure you guys did the same. Did you enjoy your weekend off?
We did. But
I did.
Yeah, well, there's never a weekend off, as you know. I mean, we, you know what? Andy Boo today during his press conference said, you know, he mentioned the word chopping. So, you know, in honor of that, I think I'll just say that we kept on chopping this weekend.
We kept on chopping. It's fair. Absolutely. All right. I'm sure you guys did what I did during the weekend, which was watch a lot of games around the country. And this is my main takeaway from the weekend. It's that if this Rutgers team was where it's supposed to be in its development in year four under Chris Ash, we'd be talking about holiday plans, right? I mean, if you look at some of these games, I mean, BC steamrolled by Kansas. It was incredible. Maryland loses to a Temple team. Illinois goes down to Eastern Michigan. I mean, Indiana looks terrible. Even Michigan State and Penn State don't look great. I mean, you know, was your takeaway the same as mine, Cratch, that this Rutgers schedule isn't nearly what we thought it might be at the beginning of the year?
Yes, but I mean, I felt this way even last year. I mean, I've said it several times on the podcast. 12 games last year, Rutgers goes 1-11. Only in three of those games, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State, did I ever feel like the opposing team had this massive, you know, talent advantage. And even the Penn State game was relatively close because McSorley was injured. So the Big Ten's not that good. It has a very soft middle. And maybe this year the soft middle is larger than it has been in past years.
Yeah.
The schedule is built for Rutgers to go at least 6-6 and go to a bowl game every year as long as they put a competent team on the field. Right. They just haven't done that recently.
And that's got to be the frustrating thing too, Sarge. And it's especially, you know, when you look at what this team has to accomplish or you think it would have to accomplish in year four to have it there. You know, I mean, it's just right in front of your fan.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason why I said 5-7 at the beginning of the year and people laughed at me. And, you know, like Crash said, I mean, I will say, I don't know if it's every year that the Big Ten is this soft. I think this year is especially soft. Even at top, I mean, Ohio State is head and shoulders above everyone else. Michigan looks beatable, maybe not by Rutgers, but I don't know if they're a top 10 team right now. Penn State, got to give them credit. All they do is win. I think I went back to the beginning of the 2015 season. They don't have a head scratching loss since the start of the 2015 season. So, you know, with the exception of those three teams, I think, you know, the Big Ten is incredibly soft. I found it fascinating that Boston College, the opponent this week, lost to Kansas, which, you know, of course, beat Rutgers a year ago. And Illinois, a future opponent, lost to Eastern Michigan. Eastern Michigan obviously beat Rutgers 2 years ago. So, you know, it's just, again, perception is everything. Right. You know, there are some games that are winnable, certainly, you know, in October, you know, and this week too, as I'm sure we're about to talk about.
Yeah, I tell you, I don't know what the problem is out in Kansas. Every time I've watched them, they are really good. That's all I can tell you. They were running circles around BC. It was incredible. And let's talk about that game because it feels like the worst case scenario for Chris Ash. If you're Chris Ash, you'd rather have them win that game by 24, come here maybe a little overconfident, maybe, you know, this is the week they don't play well. Well, instead, you know, they have their clunker at home. You know, now you've got a situation where Steve Adazio needs this win as much as Chris Ash does. You know, it's just kind of flips the narrative a little bit. But I will say this, Cratch, I mean, they're not good.
No, they're not good. I mean, the ACC is horrible this year, and they're probably a second, third tier team in the ACC. But you're right, like, and this is not a conference game for them, obviously. So they were able to kind of get that bad loss out of their system, kind of refocus themselves. You know, they still have something to play for, even with the loss to Kansas. And I'm intrigued to see this. Now, look, we were at Kansas last year, and the sky fell.
Yeah.
Does the sky fall on BC now going forward? Because it's a similar setup. I mean, BC probably looks at Rutgers and says, well, this is like playing Buffalo.
You know what, Steve? Right. They kind of remind me of Rutgers late in the Schiano era. You know, the type of team that will go, you know, 7-5, 8-5, you know, go to a bowl game every year, maybe even win their bowl game. Boston College goes to a bowl game every year, but they're just, you know, they're still not an upper echelon team that's going to contend for an ACC title. You know, kind of like Rutgers was, you know, late in the Schiano era, where you could bank on them going to a bowl game, but, you know, win the Big East was a different story.
Right, right. And the problem I still have, though, guys, it's, you know, watching that game, I'm pretty certain that Boston College is going to score points against Rutgers. I just can't, you know, I can't say the same thing about, you know,
that's
Rutgers
scoring
points. That's the issue, right? I mean, you know, you were at the press conference today. It sounds like McLean Carter is going to be ready to play. I mean, what's your sense on that? Does it make a difference if he does? I mean, what's going on, Kretz, with the quarterback situation?
It's kind of tough to read because, on one hand, if he doesn't practice on Tuesday, you would think that he's probably not going to play. Mm-hmm. Even though Chris Ash said, well, you know, he could still play. Just because my experience is, like, if a guy's not practicing at this point or even on Wednesday, he's probably not going to play. I mean, that's the way concussions work nowadays. But at the same time, Ash kind of threw out the idea that even if Carter is cleared, he's going to have missed a lot of practice. Maybe he wouldn't start. Now, I don't know if that's Ash's, you know, that's the way he's looking at it, that even if Carter gets cleared, if he hasn't had a sufficient amount of work and practice, they're going to go with Art. I also don't know if Ash is trying to play the quarterback game again.
Oh boy.
With Boston College. Not that the Eagles really care all that much. So, you know, Steve Addazio, I think in his transcript of his press conference, basically said, like, I haven't even looked at, like, their offense yet. You know, like, that's later in the week. I'll start to worry about that. So, but my guess right now is I would think that Carter's a long shot to start just because we haven't seen him practice yet. He's still in concussion protocol. And even if he does get cleared, he hasn't had a lot of work. I think you're going to see Art. And honestly, I think it's kind of fitting if Art gets a start because this is a critical, you know, fork in the road moment for Chris Ash and the program. I mean, shouldn't Art be the starter in that game? Isn't it kind of kismet that it would bounce back to Art for this crucial, you know, kind of do or die game for Ash?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I just don't know that most fans would want to see him trot out there just based on recent performances. I mean, Sarge, what's your sense? Do you think that the offense is going to be the same regardless who starts? Or, I mean, it seems like just based on what we've seen,
we talked to John McNulty
Carter
about
at least has a higher upside.
He just sounded of the opinion that you're not going to just throw away the UMass performance, you know, based on a half at Iowa, you know, the conditions. I mean, he you know, didn't make any excuses. McLean Carter was not very good against Iowa. But, you know, that being said, you know, he still shows some really, really good things, you know, in the opener, granted against a, you know, pretty crappy defense. But, you know, they're back at home. They you know, they should have some home flavor. Maybe if McLean Carter is healthy, maybe, you know, he benefits from that. You know, let's be honest. I mean, we you know, we have not seen a quarterback performance, you know, since McLean Carter, you know, in the opener. Art Sikowski had some opportunities last year against, you know, so-so opponents, never delivered that type of performance. If McLean Carter is healthy, he's going to be the guy. It's just a matter of whether or not he gets cleared in time.
I have to give you credit, Kratz, because you asked the question at the press conference that's just been gnawing at me about the eight games with 50 or less passing yards in Ash's three seasons, which is still incredible that's that. I didn't necessarily like his answer. I mean, he chalked it up to execution. I mean, what did you think when you asked him his reply to you?
I mean, when you've had eight games, when you've coached 38 games and 14 of them, your team has failed to throw for 100 yards and eight of them, it's failed to throw for 50. You've had, by my count, three offensive coordinators and five different starting quarterbacks. And Jonathan Lewis, I don't think he didn't start a game, but he played a significant amount in a lot of those games. Mm-hmm. I mean, at some point, it's like, well, like, why can't you get this fixed?
What's the common denominator? It's you.
No, I mean, like, you know, it's just like, you know, like it's recruit. I mean, it's everything. I just think it's like a complete failing top to bottom of an offense. Like, you change the scheme, you don't recruit well, you know, you don't develop a quarterback. It's it all kind of stacks up. And I think at the end of the day, it's just like, as I wrote, you're basically you and the triple option teams, and at least they're getting something out of not throwing. They're not trying to throw the ball. You are, which makes it even worse.
Can it be different this week, though, Sarge? I mean, you got to figure that you're just gonna, you're gonna count on Blackshear and Pacheco to run the ball. I mean, I don't know. That defense was so bad against Kansas. I mean, just literally, like, Kansas guys just running all over the field.
So I'll say two things about that. One, and we pressed John McNulty about that, and Chris Ash, you know, the game plan is going to have to be predicated on Blackshear and Pacheco. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. In the opener, they both got the ball 21 times apiece, and not necessarily all run plays, but, you know, plays in the flat. You know, they're both utilized in the passing game as well. Those guys have to be the, you know, if you're making a pie chart, they're going to get probably 2/3 of the offensive touches. Now, Boston College, you know, you have to think, and we saw it all of last year, you know, that teams are going to stack 8, 9, 10 guys, you know, in the box, daring Rutgers to pass the ball. Can they do it? You know, I mean, you know, we saw defenses, you know, daring Rutgers to pass the ball a year ago, and Rutgers just couldn't do it. It's going to depend on that if, you know, if they can, you know, keep him honest. But, I mean, this is going to be a game plan, I would think, that's going to be predicated on the run. It has to be.
All right. Let's dive into true or false. You guys know the rules. Answer true or false to these questions. We'll get back to them at the end and discuss a few of the topics. True or false? Put Boston College quarterback Anthony Brown on this Rutgers team, and it goes to a bowl. True or false? Cratch?
Wow.
False.
Okay, Sarge?
True.
All right. Okay. True or false? Bo Melton will have a breakthrough performance against this bad BC defense. Cratch, true or false?
False. False.
False.
Sarge? False. Okay, true or false, the bye will give Chris Ash time to make several personnel changes before the Boston College game. True or false?
True.
False.
Okay, Sarge? Wow, okay. True or false, BC is bad on defense. Rutgers needs to break out some trick plays. Cratch, true or false?
True.
False.
All right, Sarge? True or false, the Big Ten is not going to get a team in the playoff. Cratch.
True.
True.
Wow. Okay. Sarge. True or false, Rutgers should play Boston College every single year.
Cratch. True.
False.
All right. Sarge. True or false, Rutgers is a soccer school. Cratch.
True. Undefeated. Both teams likely going to be ranked on Tuesday morning.
So exciting. Sarge. All right. And finally, true or false, the RWJ Barnabas Center is so awesome, I'm going to become a gymnast.
I've seen you, your athleticism. I'm going to say false on that basis alone. But as far as being awesome, 100% true.
And it's great. I got to describe. All right, so we'll cover all this. Let's start there because I don't think fans really could appreciate what it was like walking into this building on, you know, on Thursday, and just so used to things, you know, not being at the level, the best level. You know what I'm saying? I'm not taking a shot at anybody in particular. I've just covered Rutgers for 20 years. You're just kind of used to, like, all right, well, look in the corner, there'd be something not quite right. Just not. I mean, this building is just fantastic. And what blew me away was, and I know no one cares about gymnastics, but I mean, this room that this gymnastics team has now that didn't even have a place to put their leotards and didn't have a locker room at all. It's just, I mean, it's just remarkable. It's just the best facility in the country for a team that literally had nothing. So I don't know what you guys. Your
so I have to say this, okay? Because I toured the Iowa football facility with Steve Politi, and folks, I'm going to give you a little glimpse behind the curtain, so to speak. Steve Politi walked out saying, "You know what? Whatever the Rutgers," he goes, "there's no way it's going to be nicer than this." And you know, all the Rutgers people are going to be ticked off, but you know. I'm going to write that you basically went in thinking that, you know, okay, well, this is nice, but, you know, it's not Iowa. And, you know, right. I think everyone saw by the tone of your column. I mean, you were genuinely like, just, you know, you changed your tone, right?
Blown away, absolutely, and I was going to write that they have, all right, great, they did this, but they need to keep building. They not only need the field house, need the other things too. Yeah, but you're right that it was truly. I went from sort of like, oh, let's see what they have.
And here's the thing, though, about that, because the Iowa, you know, that was their football facility. We didn't see their basketball or anything else. That was just their football facility. And if you're looking at Rutgers facility, I mean, hell, guys, I mean, the air conditioning was not working during today's press conference. I mean, and I asked Chris at the end of his presser, you know, what do you need? And he basically said, we'll have a story on the site later so you can read the quotes. But he basically said, you know, that, you know, that the Hale Center doesn't have that sex appeal. You know, come a year from now, when they build the academic facility, the Rodkin Center, they're going to move out their current academic stuff inside the Hale Center. So they'll have more space. They'll be able to, add a couple, bells and whistles, so to speak. But right now, I mean, for as great as RWJ Barnabas, that solves the issue for basketball, men's and women's basketball, wrestling, gymnastics. That's only four programs. Football, you know, is going to be the one that you need to get right. That's going to be the one that's going to hopefully down the line, you know, in the best case scenario, drive the revenue. You know, they still need to address that, namely a field house, but also the Hale Center, giving it more of the wow factor. The locker rooms are great, but beyond that, the Hale Center is, you know, probably ranks near the bottom of the Big Ten as far as facilities.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
I'll say this. At the very end of the night, as I was leaving, a prominent person in Rutgers Athletics, not going to name them, goes to me, he goes, "This doesn't really feel like a place that we would have, does it? Like, this doesn't feel like Rutgers."
Yeah.
It's a tremendous facility. I called it a Death Star on Twitter. I was blown away. Obviously no expensing to be spared. Everything was done first class. And what I liked about it was, you know, someone made the comment like, "Oh, like, you know, you don't, kids don't even have to go home. Like, they can just live here, basically."
Yeah.
And I know what the meaning of that is, but like, I also think that's a problem in college sports, that like, you build these gigantic facilities and it's almost like you don't ever want the players to leave. But like, what I liked about this thing was, it's big and it's grandiose, but it's still kind of centered on Livingston campus, and it's got all the natural light and you can see the campus, and it just feels like it's part of the campus. And I think that it's not going to become just some like kind of castle that the four programs go into and they never leave it.
Right.
You know, like, I think it's going to still be part of a college experience, which I think is something that like you see, like, Clemson, they build this like Death Star football facility, and like LSU, we all saw the photos, like, you can sleep in your locker. It's like, that's not the best thing in the world. You can just sleep in your locker and never go to your dorm and never be a normal college kid. But I feel like this facility being so kind of tied into the campus will allow that. It's a tremendous facility. No bones about it. I think Sarge is right. The Hale Center does not have the sex appeal that the APC does. But at the same time, too, I think some of that stuff's a little bit overrated. You know, Rutgers football has gotten everything – better than it's ever been under Chris Ash. So I don't think that you can sit there and say, well, you know, the Hale Center's kind of musty and it doesn't have air conditioning right now. Like, that's the reason why the team stinks. Like, that's not right. The case. I think that some of these programs, like gymnastics, had nothing. And what can you expect from a coach when she doesn't have a locker room? Yeah,
that's absolutely true.
But if you just have things that are bottom of the line, but they are giving you what you need, I think at that point, you obviously want to upgrade them. You have to, as you move forward as an athletic department, as a football program. But the facilities can't be an excuse for football.
No, it can't be. And but it is to that point. And Sarge is right. I mean, they're going to have to address that. That's the next thing on the list. You can't have a deflatable bubble. And Iowa's got like the Amazon distribution warehouse for, you know, these are the teams you recruit against. So that's going to be. That's going to be next up. All right, what else do we talk about in true or false? So you think, sorry, is that Brown and his Rutgers team?
I said they were going to be 5-7 at the beginning of the year, and you know, the thing that's held them back in the last 3 years has been quarterback play. Anthony Brown is a legit quarterback. I mean, he is a guy who would start for Rutgers. He would have started last year. He would start now. Their quarterback play has been, you know, abysmal.
Yeah, he's not Kyler Murray though. I mean, look, I've looked at that game against Kansas. He's not perfect. He's inaccurate at times.
Not Kyler Murray. Not many are. You watched it. I've watched a lot of Boston College. He would start, right? I mean, he would start at Rutgers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he runs the system absolutely. Well. I mean, there's what we see from Boston College is they like to play up tempo. I think he is a good fit for that system. Is he a guy who's going to play on Sundays? Probably not. But I think at Rutgers, I think he'd make a world of difference.
Right. All right. What else do we talk about? So this is interesting. I thought that the bye would give some time for personnel changes. Kratz, you think what we've seen is what we're going to get here?
Yeah, I mean, I more said that as I don't necessarily know that they're going to make any changes. You know, I asked about Malik Dixon, and Andy Booth shut that down immediately. I just kind of look at the hot points. Like, there's nothing, not the tight end. They've been pleased with what Matt Alimo has done, but they've got Pennison's not going to be back. They've got no bodies at tight end. You know, they've done the mixing and matching with the offensive line. Like, those guys are who they are. I mean, I guess you could start Lonsdorf over Raekwon O'Neal, but I don't think that any of the five starting offensive linemen have played poorly enough that they need to make a change. You know, the wide receivers are what they are, and you go on defense. I mean, they already have a linebacker rotation. They're playing every defensive lineman they have. They're just not producing up front. And the secondary, I mean, those are the guys that they're cycling everybody in to begin with. So I just don't see what position changes could be coming.
All right. Good observations. And let's do 30 seconds on soccer. 6-0. Is that what it is? New coach for the men's team. Mike O'Neill, obviously one of the three best coaches in
men's team is 5-0, and you know, coming off back-to-back 4-win seasons, I mean, it's a tremendous job by Jim McElderry so far. You know, I spent a day with him this summer, and just talking to some of the guys on the team, you could just tell. And you know, this is sometimes a coaching change is needed, new voice, and you could tell that the players had a lot of enthusiasm to play for this guy. All their games have been close, which most soccer games are, but they've been winning the games that are close, which they haven't done the last couple of years. They haven't played a Big Ten game yet, so you preface it with that. But I talked to McElderry the other day. He seems pretty confident that this is no fluke, and we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting. Once again, the Big Ten play September 21st against Michigan at Michigan is the first one. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they can keep it up.
All right, we ready for some questions from Project Text? You guys don't know this yet. NJ.com/text. It's our great new thing where we can communicate directly with you and tell you what's going on before anybody else knows it. And also, we ask each week to give us some questions. And I got to be honest with you, the texters are getting frisky and funny. We've got some funny ones this week. Like someone texted in to say, "Question: do you think Daniel Jones gets the start at quarterback for Rutgers on Saturday?" and because of where my head is, I read it and said, "Wait a minute, what?" There's a 2 second pause of, "That's a great idea. Like, why wouldn't they do that?" Oh, that's right, because he's on the Giants. That was one good. And here's another question I loved. Give credit to whoever sent it in. How many words would Politi's column be if Chris Ash pulled what Narduzzi did, kicking a field goal from the one down 7 with 5 minutes to play? And then, of course, this is the Pitt Penn State game. And my answer to that was, there'd be no column. My head would have exploded. It would just be all over the press box. Kratz would be cleaning it up off his laptop, and that would be the end of my career if Chris Ash did. That was incredible. I mean, that really was. Were you guys watching that game?
I watched it, and his excuse was incredible. They needed two scores to win. But, dummy, you needed one score to tie the game to get to that point.
Going to tie. Yes, of course. Oh, my God. It was not a good – if you were making a list of coaches that would theoretically be on a short list of people to talk to for if the move happens with Chris Ash.
Statistically, I saw a stat. I think 70% of the time on fourth and one from the goal line, you score touchdowns. So, I mean, it just from a pure statistical standpoint, right. It made no sense. It's just dumb.
Yep. All right. Here's another good question. I'm curious for your thoughts to see how Rutgers defense matches up with Dillon in the BC run game. If I'm BC, he's getting the ball over 50% of their offensive plays. Kratz, I think 50% might be conservative based on what I've seen. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bad matchup for Rutgers just because we've all seen the big runs that opponents have broken off since dating back to last year. We saw it against UMass. We saw it a little bit against Iowa. I just think when you have a good running back, it's bad news for Rutgers. And I would not shock me if A.J. Dillon has one of those games where he breaks off a couple of 30, 40-yard runs, and then we go back to next week and, like, why these runs happen, and then they, bad run fits, gap integrity, whatever. But no matter what the explanations are, it's a common recurring theme that Rutgers has dealt with over the last, season in two games, and I think it's a bad matchup. I think that if you're BC, you ride Dillon in this game.
On the other side of it, Sarge, question, how does Rutgers plan to get Pacheco and Blackshear back into the game plan? Wildly successful versus UMass, but virtually absent versus Iowa.
Here's the thing, ask John McGoldy that question, and he did make a good point that, especially in the pass game, Blackshear had an opportunity with a pass over the middle. I think Pacheco had a couple as well, and they just didn't hit on them. So, I mean, the number, I think it was 6 for Pacheco, 7 for Blackshear, 13 total combined, targets. That goes up if they hit a couple of those. So, there's no question. Again, if you just look at the Kansas game, there should be opportunities to run the ball. Those guys are clearly the head and shoulders, the two best guys on the offense. How are they going to get use them? I think they're just going to try to keep it simple. They're going to try to pound the ball and establish a run and see whether or not they can have an advantage early on in the game.
Right. And this is another good one. Goes back to Ash's coaching. And will Ash finally watch an opponent on film and make adjustments to exploit their tendencies, or just sit in a gap scheme on the DL? I think on defense, I think what he's talking about very simply, Ash has had now a week to prepare for this. He's facing a good offense. I mean, is this the game finally where, all right, the head coach does something that when it's over, you watch it and you go, hey, that was a great game plan by Chris Ash. Are we going to see that, Kratz? Is this an opportunity for him to be a coach?
No, definitely. I mean, look, I think this is, like we've said, it's the biggest game he's coached at Rutgers. He's got an open week to prepare. He's got 2 weeks to prepare. This should be his masterpiece. Like, Rutgers needs Ash on defense to roll out, a five-act masterpiece. Because on offense, you don't know what you're getting, So you might have a great game. You might have what you had against Iowa, I mean, if I'm Ash, I look at this game and say, I have to find a way to hold BC to 14 points or less. Because that might be the only way I can guarantee we have a chance to win the game.
That's a tough ask.
Well, I mean, when you go get shut out by Iowa, I mean, when was the last time they scored 20 points against a real team.
Hang on. I got the media guy here. In 1888, they played Yale. No, that was a loss.
It's unfortunate, but you might have to win. Like, the only way you win this game might be 14-13. Like, you might. It's not easy to go into a game, especially against a team that has Anthony Brown and A.J. Dillon, and say that, but
The answer, by the way, is November 4th, 2017 against Maryland.
Honestly,
31-24 was last time. But not last year. I mean, you know, if you're being – they scored 17 against Wisconsin, and you'd have to
– okay.
Yeah, some of those are garbage time. Yep.
No.
Yep.
And, now, and, what, and like, one of those garbage times. So, like, yeah.
Yeah.
You might have to – Ash might have to hold BC to 14 points.
I got one. November 1st, 1890 – they beat the Crescent Athletic Club 68-0. Woo!
What I mean,
an absolute disgrace that Crescent Athletic Club is certainly.
But to answer the question, I tend to believe it. Year four, Chris Ash's defense is what it is, and people who are expecting to show up to the ballpark one Saturday afternoon, and you know. I mean, everybody's blitzing and the whole kitchen sink's being thrown in the backfield.
But, yo, the 1890 game, I do remember Politi coming out of
this needs to be a game plan.
Saying, James Bishop for Heisman. Remember when you said that? And that was a memorable one. But then the following week, they lost 70-0 to Yale, and then you tried to fire the coach. Remember?
It was terrible. Those were the days. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, that's right. Project test questions. All right. The final question. Would be interested to know whether Sarge's calculus has shifted. I didn't know you had a calculus, much less that it could shift. In light of that terrible BC performance versus Kansas, a perfect transition into predictions. Sarge, before the season, you picked the Scarlet Knights to beat Boston College, much to our amazement on this very podcast.
I failed calculus.
There you go.
Give us
your best thought. Is it going to happen?
Two tries, I think. I'm sticking with Rutgers. 24-21 Rutgers. A late Davidowicz field goal. I think it'll be close. If anything, the Kansas game kind of backed it up. Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for Rutgers to move the ball. I think they're going to try to control the tempo. I think this is going to be the game where we could walk out and say, you know what, 2-1 at this point is exactly what really should be. Ooh, no!
Down the goalposts.
I mean they're so starved for a win. You never know.
All right, Cratch, what do you got?
I will go with, I believe the line is currently at 7. I will go with Boston College 31, Rutgers 17.
Okay.
Yeah, I know BC played poorly against Kansas. I just think at the end of the day, Boston College is going to score points against Rutgers. I just don't think we've seen anything that proves that Rutgers can do that on offense against a quality opponent. I know BC doesn't have a great pass rush. And, like, look, certainly Rutgers should be able to win the football game. I've seen nothing over the last, year plus that indicates to me that they are going to be able to go into this game with so much pressure on, with so many eyes on, such a critical game. And now this is going to be the moment that they put all together and deliver. I just have a hard time predicting that. So I think BC wins this game pretty comfortably by, a couple
of
touchdowns.
I'm with you, Cratch. I think Rutgers is going to get destroyed. I'm prepared to be wrong. I think that BC is going to score a lot of points, and I'm looking at like a 41-17 kind of game. And then we'll know. It'll be clarity. We'll have everyone in Piscataway will have an idea what's going to happen next. I just do not. I think it's a bad matchup for them. I think Boston College has too much talent that they're going to move the ball up and down the field. I have seen nothing from the Rutgers passing game, especially if Art Sikowski stars, to make me think that they're going to have any success even against a bad defense. So there you go. One piece of optimism and two curmudgeons, as always, here on the podcast. That's all I got. What do you guys got? Any final thoughts?
Field hockey? Can we talk field hockey? They won a big game at Monmouth. I mean,
You can talk field hockey. I'm not sure I'm capable of doing so.
No, total seriousness. Rutgers volleyball. Steve, you're very familiar with them. Nice. 1-99 column. They're on a roll.
Nice. That's great.
I'm pulling up the information right now.
I saw that they lost an early game against Grand Canyon, so I thought that must have been difficult playing at
Is Thunder Dan Marley still the head basketball coach?
I don't have the answer to that. No.
Rutgers women. Go ahead, Sarge. Rutgers volleyball 6-3, six straight wins. They have defeated one, actually, I believe two tournaments. They won the Rutgers Invitational. They beat Princeton, Virginia, and Towson. And then they, at the Ellis Rowland Memorial Tournament hosted by Colgate, 3-0. Wins over Colgate, Quinnipiac, and New Hampshire. So they're down in D.C., it looks like, on Friday and Saturday to play American and Howard. Big Ten opener next Wednesday, September 25.
I did a little breaking news for the our tech subscribers over the weekend. Baseball is getting a facility upgraded. They're getting new field turf. They're moving the fences in, basically 15 feet in the left field corners. Center field, I think, goes in about 20 feet. It was the biggest park in the Big Ten, 410 in center field. Now it's down to decreased down to 390. They only hit 7 home runs combined a year ago. Softball is also getting a facility improvement, getting new fencing, new field turf, and both will be done by mid-October. Total cost $1.5 million. A big gift by Ron Baton, whose name is on the baseball field as well. So good stuff happening just from a facility standpoint over baseball softball.
Cratch, you forgot. What about Soriano? We didn't talk about Nick Soriano.
Oh, that's right. No, it's true. Yeah, we had that break last week. So Nick Soriano is in Olympic red shirt, for at least for the fall semester. He's not enrolled currently. He's going to train with his eye on, trying to make the Olympic team in 2020. Obviously, the trials will be in early April at Penn State, kind of ironically. So looks like Rutgers is going to have Soriano and Ashnault bidding to make the Olympic team along with some of the NJRTC athletes. The big question going forward now is, will Nick sit out the whole year in redshirt and come back for 2020-21 to finish out his college career? Will he re-enroll in December or January and kind of wrestle a limited schedule? As I explained to you the other day, he doesn't really have to wrestle until the Big Ten championships here at Rutgers at beginning of March. He can just make weight, show up, step on the mat, wrestle one or two bouts, and then he'll get the AQ spot. He'll be in the tournament, and then he can go to Minneapolis for nationals and try to win a national title. So he could do that, or maybe wrestle a handful of dual meets. Kyle Snyder, the gold medalist, three-time NCAA champ from Ohio State, his final year in college, he wrestled kind of a limited college schedule where he was competing internationally and other events for Team USA, and then he would kind of be back for the big dual meets and obviously for the Big Tens and nationals. So be interesting to see how Soriano approaches it, the idea that, hey, if he has a big run in the Olympics, does he even come back to Rutgers? So does he move on to other things now that he's got his national title? So it was always going to be a transition year for Rutgers wrestling. They're kind of in a spot now where, Ashnault is gone, Gravina's gone, Van Biel's gone. They've got this very promising freshman class coming in, guys who are developing. Starting in 2020-21, they could be a real national force, a team that competes for trophies, sends 3 or 4 guys to nationals each year with a legitimate chance to All-American. This is always going to be a transition year, but if Nick doesn't wrestle, I think it becomes even more of a youth movement for them. And it's going to be interesting to see because, Rutgers, the fan base has grown so large over the last few years because there's been a lot of winning and a lot of excitement. And I'm intrigued to see how the casual Rutgers wrestling fan handles a year where they're kind of 500-ish in dual meets and maybe they've got one real All-American threat at nationals. I'm kind of intrigued to see how the casual Rutgers wrestling fan handles kind of a so-so season,
I hope they both make it to Tokyo because I'm going and Olympic wrestling is great. I don't know what's going on, but it's great. I know that. So, all right, guys, let's sign off. That'll do it for this week's podcast.
Oh, Steve, one last thing. We're having our first Rutgers Sports Insider Project Text meetup, 7 to 9 this Thursday, September 19th, Tavern on George in New Brunswick. 7 to 9 p.m. open for subscribers only. You can bring a plus one.
I will reserve the news
for bring a plus one.
Time it actually appears, but I will say this: we do have a special guest coming, a big name.
Okay,
someone from the Greg Schiano era, but someone who has stayed involved with the program as a big name. And you know, I just like I said, I will break the news on our Project Text subscribers. But it's a big name, and Rutgers fans are going to enjoy him.
Wow, exciting. All
excellent.
Right, look forward to that for tonight.
So anyway, RSVP to Project Text. So if you are a Project Text subscriber, send us a text. Let us know you're coming. And if you're not a subscriber but you'd like to come, go to nj.com/text, sign up, and you will be
It's free food, and you don't have to talk to me if you don't want to. Okay, signing off, Steve Politi, James Kratz, Keith Sargent. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday, to recap the Boston College game. Thanks, guys. Bye.